Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, yeah, I love that podcast show. Oh, BS and beer is the place to go to get all the Saints news. Hell yeah, podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na na.
Now, recording live, it's the BS and Beer Podcast crew with your host, David Romero.
Welcome in, everybody. It's Dave Romero with a BS and Beer short. I have some additional thoughts, and I didn't want to wait till our next recording after the Monday night game to share them with you. And the thoughts are primarily about the quarterback competition. And I know it's probably been beat to death, but I feel like this is somewhat of a new spin off of this subject. And the point of it is the idea that now, or the narrative now, is that this competition is too close. It's too close. And that's a problem, and I'm not really here to talk about the problems, but it's just the idea that this competition is so close. And then I stop and I think about it, and I use this golf analogy. I go play with my friends who are scratch golfers, right? And so, generally speaking, you know, I can hit the ball long. I can make some good shots. I can recover from the sand, chip pretty good. And when I play them, I get so frustrated because I'm standing right there with them on the green in regulation. For those of you who don't play golf, that means like if it's a par four, you're on the green in two, right? And if it's a par five, you're on the green in three. But what I realized over time is that these guys are always pressing or challenging for the birdie, meaning they might have a 15-foot putt, a 12-foot putt. And if they sink that putt, which isn't necessarily a short putt, but if they sink it, they're getting a birdie, right? And I find that I always have the 26-foot putt, the one that the chance of me making, unlikely, but yet I'm always chasing the par, right? So that 26, 28, 32-foot putt that I'm trying to make, if I leave it a little bit too short or maybe a little too long, it rolls off the backside of the green, now I got to make a 12-foot putt for par. And if I miss that, then I get a bogey, right? And I'm just using it as a general example. So the point is that while to the average observer who doesn't really know all the information or have all the insight to the game, well, golly, it looks like Dave can hit the ball just as long as those guys. Looks like Dave's standing right there next to them. It's not like I'm over there like Caddyshack swinging in the weeds. Not that it doesn't happen occasionally, but generally for this conversation. And they're always challenging. So sometimes they'll get a par. Sometimes they'll get a birdie. With me, again, yes, occasionally do I get a birdie? Yes, but I'm not constantly challenging for a birdie. I get the birdies when I make a good putt or a good chip or a good approach. These guys are always challenging for it. So to the outside observer, again, it looks like, hey, man, these guys are right on it. They're about the same. But when we get to the clubhouse, they shot a 73 and I shot an 82. And it really wasn't that close. It just seemed that way to the casual observer. So let's take this same analogy and apply it to the quarterback competition. First of all, you have mostly media who many, if you really know these guys, if you do a little background on them, most of them never played football before. They're writers, they're journalists, they're not necessarily people who came from an athletic background. But even a guy like Bobby Hebert, who's over at practice and played quarterback, do you know how hard it is to really look from the sideline? Now, I'm not sitting here and try to be braggadocious and tell you about all my experience, but I've covered the Saints on the sidelines as a credentialed member of the media for, I don't know, seven seasons or so. over the course of the last, I don't want to tell you how long, but, you know, all the way back to the dick of years. And I've also worked with NFL scouts. Now, this isn't to tell you that I know and they don't. What this is to tell you is that what I know is you can't tell by sitting in practice with a ground level view and understand what these quarterbacks were supposed to be doing. So let's take this and extrapolate it. I'm watching a quarterback. He drops back. He dumps it off to the running back. 2 yard gain. And everybody chalks it up. The reporters all write on their notepad. Oh, well, you know, maybe it wasn't a good play, but it wasn't a bad one. So at least it goes against or towards their completion percentage. And then it kind of gets chalked up as a good play, right? Because if nothing else, it says, hey, he didn't do anything wrong. He checked it down and his completion percentage looks good. But the fact of the matter is the coaches are going to go to the film room and say, your first read would have been open and a 12-yard gain. But you dumped it off to the running back, so you didn't see what you were supposed to, and you threw it to the wrong guy. So that's a fail. But then now you have the next quarterback comes in, and he drops back, and maybe because of the pressure applied from the third team left tackle, he ends up having to get rid of the ball or not make an accurate throw, but made the right read, the right decision. So now the coaches are over there thinking, okay, it may not be a negative and it may not be a positive, but they're not going to really hit the player for getting pressured by a defensive end against a third team tackle or a second team tackle or a pressure in general. And it throws the ball out of bounds. It's not going to be a positive play, but it's not going to be a negative play. But to the reporters, oh my God, the quarterback struggled. He looked uncomfortable. You know, name all the things that they'll say if he got pressured and threw the ball out of bounds. It's not going to be a positive play. So relative to what they saw with the other quarterback who threw it to the running back, oh, that was the running back play was the better play. The guy throwing it out of bounds was not as good a play. But the fact of the matter is the coaches would chalk that up and say the incompletion was the better play because it was the right decision. Where the other play, checking it down to the running back, was the wrong decision. Now, let's add into another fact of why these quarterbacks may not be looking like they're separating themselves. You have your first team offense. Have you heard that Ramczyk has been out? You know, they don't disclose injuries, but he's been out for a few days. He's just recently come back. Armstead's been out or held out. So now you have your backup tackles with your first team offense. So when whoever is playing with the first team offense, they're already at a disadvantage. We've all heard and actually seen the pressure. We know how good Cam Jordan can be, how good he is. We've seen what we've hoped to be out of Davenport, who I now call only two firsts. You know, everybody's calling him two firsts like it's a negative thing. We gave up two firsts. Now, all we gave up was two firsts for a guy. Well, you know, I use that. I spun it because he's my dude. I still have and I have not lost faith in him. I think he's going to have a big season. But now he's putting pressure on the quarterbacks on the first team because he's going up against backup tackles. And so now they're saying, well, you know, it doesn't matter if they're with the starting unit or the backup unit. They're still struggling. We also, whether it might hurt, but if you really search your soul, the Saints are really down at the wide receiver position. So they're sitting there with guys who are not impact players. And I don't want to belittle the accomplishments of Callaway. He looks like he's developed. But if you search your soul, none of these guys are guys that are impact players per se. Every down, throw the ball to them like a Michael Thomas. So you have backup tackles with guys going up against them with apparently Davenport has something to prove. And obviously that's a whole subject to itself, but we know it's true, right? He has something to prove and he's proven it almost every day. He is wrecking practice. So when you're with the first team, is that some sort of advantage to have backup tackles going up against a guy who's very talented and has something to prove in practice and throwing to receivers who aren't your primary starters? So that's not necessarily a recipe for success. So now everyone's saying, well, even when they're the starters, they're just not great. There's no scheming involved. So even if you have some issues, you say Peyton's a genius. Do you think in practice he's trying to develop things to take pressure off his quarterbacks? I would bet that Peyton loves the idea of seeing Davenport tear apart the offense every day and put extreme pressure on the quarterback and see how they react. Wouldn't you agree? All right, so now you're with the second team. You're with receivers that may not even be practice squad guys if we had our normal allotment of receivers in camp. Smith, Thomas, these guys are now your fifth, sixth, seventh receivers, okay? And backup offensive line, it's a disaster. So you're not consistent on the second team. I already explained why you're not consistent on the first team. And now we're all upset because, well, our offense looks terrible. And both the quarterbacks have not stepped up. They haven't separated themselves. But have they really? I would almost bet that one of them has. I'm not here to tell you who it is. But I'm here to tell you that there has been enough data compiled for the coaches who have that all 22 know what the responsibilities of the quarterbacks were and are looking over there, leaning back like a proud dad, thinking to himself, man, we're putting a lot of pressure on these guys. And I tell you what, this guy's stepping up. This guy, he's improved in this area, you know, or hey, this guy's not really living up to what I expected him to do. But they understand what they're doing, and it's a strategic situation where they're putting the pressure on these quarterbacks and wanting to see which one stands up to that pressure. They don't want it to be easy. They want it to be hard. They want to see what Jameis Winston's going to be under pressure. When the bullets are flying, when things aren't going his way, when he doesn't have what many consider a top five, if not the best offensive line in the NFL, just creating a wall for him. And you know what? Let's talk about Kamara. Yeah, I mean, we hardly hear about him. You think the Saints want to get him hurt in practice or get any type of wear and tear on him in practice? He didn't play in the game. So you tell me what that defense has to be scared about. And that is putting an enormous amount of pressure on both of these quarterbacks. And the Saints coaches are figuring out which ones are handling it better. Are they looking super successful? Are they out there just ripping the defense apart, making the reporters walk away saying, golly, man, these guys are just, they're amazing. No, they're not. They don't have the tools to work with. And I'm positive, well, at least in my mind, that the coaches are happy with how it's playing out right now. So anyway, what does this mean? I don't know exactly what it means. I don't know exactly what it means for the future, what it means for game one. But what I do know is there's more information that the coaches have. There's more things being figured out than what these beat writers understand. And quite frankly, I'm saying this in a way that makes it sound like I'm picking on the beat writers. The fact of the matter is they're only doing what they can. They don't have access to all the information. All they can tell you is quarterback A threw the ball to the running back in the flats. They don't know where his primary read was. They don't know what he looked, how he looked downfield. They can only tell you the results. And then when it's done, they look at the results. They say, hey, it looked about even to me. And it's hard to argue with that. But either way, I don't think it's as even as everyone thinks it is right now. And we're getting close. We're getting close to a decision. I expect that decision to be made. Maybe not publicly, but we'll probably be able to start telling by practice reps. Coach Peyton will have to tip his hand sooner rather than later because he's going to want to get this offense in sync, clicking, get the starter more reps. So I bet you after Monday, we'll start seeing one guy get some more reps than the other guy. So that's all I had for the short today. I know I didn't really answer any questions, but I'm trying to put things in perspective. I'm thinking that this quarterback situation is a little bit more sorted out than the general public might think. All right, we'll talk to you probably Tuesday after the game. We'll see if maybe they might step on the field and separate themselves and we don't have to wait for, you know, Peyton to tip his hand about anything. But until then, y'all have a great one. Enjoy the game, and we'll talk to you next week.
And anyway, the person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists, writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not going away. I'll be back, and that's the way it is.
Everyone is a so dumb, we have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Oh, we have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Oh, boy, don't waste time to tune into our podcast. Oh, girl, give your time to David, Heed, and Thomas. We do this every week. Every Wednesday. So don't miss, we do this every week. Every Wednesday, so don't.